Danke. You made me a very special gift by inviting me over to give this lecture. It's been a challenging year. It's been a very, very rich year that I had. Compiling this, finding out what it was that wanted to be on paper and stay to be on paper. It's a different botany I am conveying to you. It's not James Backhouse's botany, is that right? Tim, you must help me from Botanik. Yes. Growing fruitful friendship is my topic. Sometimes it is the very special nature of a situation that turns an invitation to a call. This I experienced 2 years ago. I had one of my low days, a deep cloud of self-doubt hanging over me so thick I could not even reach out to my friends. A meeting for worship remained empty. It was a long day. In the evening, almost mechanically, I opened the mail, and I was stunned. Seeing a name that I remembered from far away and long ago broke a first hole in that fog so that curiosity could start peeking in. I started reading. Our Backhouse committee wants to invite you. Total misbelief. Me? Why me? Why this? Why right now, this very night? Was it possible that while I had been torturing myself with scruples, there were people out on the other side of the globe who trusted I had something to share after all? Receiving an invitation under these circumstances, how could I dare back away from something that seemed as if it had come from divine intervention? My mind was resolutely set back on the creative path again. It was a rich time looking round, asking whatever came my way if it wanted to be my subject matter. In the end, the subject that found me was friendship. Friendship has special importance for me because I never experienced a normal development of family relations. My mother died at the end of 45 when I was 3. When I was 5 years old, I was separated from my grandparents and siblings. My father had gone missing as a soldier. And I was fostered out far away into a new family with a new set of parents, brothers, and a sister. Lacking stability and a feeling of belonging, I had to learn to adapt to new locations, new situations, new carers, new neighbors. For the sake of surviving, I learned to grow friendships. I also learned to say farewell and to trust that some link would remain, just as I was linked with my siblings who I could not see or meet. Was that somehow trusting God? Of course, I still quarreled with God. Life was not easy. Why did God allow all this to happen? When I was in my early teens, someone suggested to me that it was because God knew that I would be able to master this fate. This gave me a completely new perspective on all those humps and depressions that would continue to haunt me. Perhaps God was trusting me too. It is possible that this vague perception of mutual trust established what tentatively could be called friendship with this God who had, once I had escaped starvation, given me such a rich life. I suspect this may be why friendship became my subject for this lecture. But why, given your quite different life stories, should it be relevant to you? Well, we are the Religious Society of Friends. If this is not to be an empty phrase, we need to look and see every once in a while what we mean by friendship, how we can cultivate it, what empowers us to maintain it. The next step in developing this lecture was finding a vehicle to carry my message. As my mind feeds on images, it seemed important to find an image that could illustrate what I feel and think about friendship. Friendship is like a wonderful garden. This was one of the many definitions of friendship that I heard from all kinds of people over the following months. It was given to me one night by a friend and colleague in central Gaza City in Palestine, where, amidst all the fear and hatred that had troubled in that troubled corner of the world, there is so desperately little of anything like a garden, and friendship is so hard to live. Perhaps it was this great contrast that made the idea stay with me. It looked like an almost perfect image to use, except that my mental image of a garden is definitely European. And you may have to translate some of my garden images into your own context. So I asked you to imagine an easy European garden. Long after I had decided to use this image, I turned on the radio one Sunday morning at practice time. "This is my garden," said a voice. "Everyone will believe this, and I don't allow anyone to play in it apart from myself." I was startled, for at this time of day I expected classical music. "This is my story," I said to myself as I went on listening. You may be more familiar with Oscar Wilde's fairy tale, The Selfish Giant, than I was. You may remember that in order to keep the children out of his garden, the giant builds a big wall around it, and the garden falls into harsh and permanent winter. Only when the giant eventually shows compassion for a little child does spring and life return, and the children are allowed back. At the end of his life, the giant meets the child again, and this time recognizes him for who he really is by the wounds on his small hands and feet. The giant finds himself invited to the child's garden, which is, of course, paradise. Indeed, this was my story. The garden, seen as a metaphor for life and for the way we relate to other people and to God. Now, having introduced myself, the topic and the metaphor, it is time to tell you how I have planned this garden walk. First, we shall look at some of my findings on friendship. In our tour of the garden, I'd like to show you some varieties of friendship and how they grow. We shall go into the garden shed to find out what resources we have to tend our garden, and then pause at the lake to reflect. Before we part, we shall look beyond the garden to see what role friendship can play in the broader context of our time. On the notion of friendship in general, European friends offered me such phrases as a place of acceptance, somewhere you don't have to pretend, an empowering experience, a good balance of giving and taking, and a place where you are supported and held with your spiritual and emotional doubts and findings. However, all that seems to be an ideal that we do not always manage to live by. I suggest we look at wisdom about friendship that we can find in our cultural fabric. Aristotle and Cicero wrote long treatises on the topic. You may just as well take the sun out of the sky as friendship from life, for the immortal gods have given us nothing better and more delightful, says Cicero. Yet he sees friendship as restricted to only extremely few, extremely virtuous men. Women are apparently too weak for it. And says that friendship is so concentrated and restricted a thing that all the true affection in the world is shared by no more than a handful of individuals. Some 1,200 years later, Albert de Rivo, a Cistercian abbot from Scotland, wrote a Christian response to Cicero. He also wrote a dialogue on friendship, though explicitly set in the presence of Christ. For now, Christ is the model of friendship in his complete solidarity with the whole of the human condition. This makes friendship much more accessible to ordinary people than does the view of the classical philosophers. Isn't Jesus' repeated reminder from Leviticus, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself," an active encouragement to friendship? All our human relationships and actions should then have their source in this experience of friendship with God through Jesus' example. Initially, when I read about ideal friendships in those classical texts, I perceived them as two-dimensional. Cicero talks about complete sympathy, the one being the second self of the other. This seemed to me to suggest friendship concerned only the two persons involved, united in complete mutual trust. For a while, I had the wild idea that it was no wonder there were so few real friendships in those pre-Christian days. A stool cannot stand on two legs. Yet, Elwood showed me that with Jesus, a new dimension came into play. Mutual trust was augmented by trust in Jesus or God, which introduces a third dimension. It eventually dawned on me that friendship, from a Christian perspective, is indeed a three-dimensional thing. God is the third partner and the author of that love and trust which makes friendship possible. Early Quakers did not write about friendship. They lived it. The most striking example of this I found in Barbara Blowden's account of the travels, sufferings, and persecutions of 1691. In Exeter prison, she'd been whipped almost to death, and a friend dressed her wounds. Yet, the next day, Barbara was released, and I quote, "Together with all the gypsies, and the beadle followed us 2 miles out of the city. And as soon as he left us, I returned back again and went up into the prison to see my friends that were prisoners there at the same time. I took my leave of them and went to Topsham." End of quote. I can hardly imagine stronger evidence of what I see as three-dimensional friendship than this action. Barbara went back into the lion's den only a day after that barbaric whipping just as a matter of course, simply to say goodbye to her friends because she loved them. And she could do so because she trusted God. Trust in her friends alone would not have helped much considering their persecution and misery. When contemplating friendship from my Quaker perspective today, I would use words like an equal footing, openness, a certain intimacy, and caring, with trust as the basis of all this. I could be even briefer, God's Spirit in all of us, because recognizing God in whoever comes my way is the foundation for trust and for equality. It encourages me to open up. Then, caring comes naturally. Outside our religious society, we vary in generosity in our use of the title friend. Some people call a friend only that person with whom they are really close. Others may need a substantial period of establishing solid trust. I, for my part, can easily refer to somebody as my friend, with whom I share a fair amount of trust, and whom I would be looking forward to meet. In addition, of course, I have good friends, special friends, a few spiritual friends, and one or two best friends. All these friendships are the plants I find in my friendship garden. Sorry. In my mind, I have had a friendship garden for as long as I can remember. However, not all that long ago, I started to tend it consciously. My friendship garden is a colorful mixture of plants of all varieties. There's just one limitation to this analogy. A rose will always be a rose, but friendship can be quite different according to our perspective. The same friendship can be compared with either a rose, here symbolizing concern, or a raspberry, which I chose to symbolize connectedness. It can also be seen as a dandelion, standing for energy and perseverance, or a snowdrop for continuity, a lily for spirituality, or laburnum for risk, or even a fruit tree, the plant that lent itself for distinguishing between fruitful friendship and the more barren form. Even weeds, for harm, can have some of the qualities of the other plants, and vice versa. I could have chosen different plants to symbolize the characteristics I intend to emphasize, and you may have to translate my images into plants that are familiar to you in this land. Also, in their development, friendships can go through different forms and phases, thus emphasizing different characteristics at different points in time. Friendships are indeed extremely complex. It is for simplification that I opted for one particular comparison at this point. First of all, we'll look at the roses of caring. I guess I'm not the only one who has quite a number of roses in her garden, different in size, color, and scent, and all with their own story. One of my most formative friendships was some 15 years ago with Gertrude, a young friend in my meeting. Initially, we were not especially close, but we had the sort of basically trusting relationship that encouraged her to ask me, when she was diagnosed with cancer, if I would take her to her chemotherapy treatments. I found I was called upon to create an atmosphere that allowed her to be her true and vulnerable self, without having to pretend to be strong and always coping. We had plenty of time together to develop a good friendship. And sad though it was, experience life at the brink of death gave our relationship extra depth. Like roses, friendships need nurturing. We come next to the raspberries of connectedness. Do you have raspberries in your garden? I once planted a few seedlings and some years later was extremely surprised to find new shoots all over the place. This is why I chose them to represent the deep connectedness which I see at the core of all friendship. In a little essay on her experiences in the African part of FWCC's threefold word gathering in 1991, Rhonis Chapman relates a very special encounter she had had when she went to a friend's church in northern Kenya. Smiling warmly, a small child took her hand and went to great lengths to compare it with her own. Rhonis described this incident as moments of intimacy, a meeting of that of God in us both, and added that, gently but persistently, this child was my friend while we worshipped. Indeed, friendship does not necessarily need long to develop. It can occur suddenly, coming seemingly from nowhere. Have you ever chatted with your neighbor on a train or plane and found yourself sharing the deepest personal or even spiritual experiences? Then there are the dandelions of potential. Some friendships grow in surprising places. I believe the dandelions would be a good symbol for such relationships. They just come out everywhere, and they spread their seeds most generously. This is where the friendship with Jurek belongs. We met some 20 years ago in Lublin, Poland, the place where both of us were born around the same time during German occupation. My birth parents were confessed and active Nazis in that time and would never even have greeted his Polish parents, let alone peeped into his pram to look at this other little sweetie. Yet Jurek showed me around his town, our town, as he called it. He even took me to Majdanek, the extermination camp on the outskirts, where, besides hundreds of thousands of Jewish people, his fellow Poles suffered and died at the hands of my fellow Germans. From Jurek, there was not a word of accusation, not a word of blame, only open and trusting friendship. This friendship is like one of those dandelions that managed to find a crack even in concrete pavement. Friendships are beyond human control. They just happen. Now let's look at the snowdrops of continuity. That they don't flower in January in Australia doesn't really matter in our friendship garden. They show us how little we need. They show their fine white bloom for a while, and then they are gone, leaving no visible trace until they are back again next year. Friendship can be like that too. Zile from South Africa is such a friend. Whenever we meet, we share really good friendship, deep and fruitful. Between us, there is safe and honest sharing, trust, and the spirit. At the end of the conference, we part with love, looking forward to our next encounter, whenever that may be. And here are the lilies of spirituality. For me, the white lily is the flower of Annunciation, probably because Italian painters of the Renaissance used it in this context. This is why I chose it, to represent friendship, which is explicitly based on spirituality. Both my lily friends are devout Christians. It took me a while to see beyond what initially irritated me. I had to translate their Christian language into my own spiritual imagery, only to find out that there was an amazing correspondence. What I have learned from this is that spiritual friendship requires extra time to grow, and a readiness to allow something in that is beyond our own making. Friendship can also be risky. Here we have the laburnum bush. Lovely yellow flowers, delicate fruits, yet deadly poisonous. It is risky to have them in your garden. In a back copy of The Friend, I came across the question, do you want to be careful or do you want to be friends? Friendship is indeed the opposite of being careful. Friendship is dangerous, the writer says, but friendship is also keeping my heart and mind open to the unexpected miracle. Fear and need for absolute security are definitely hindrances to friendship. It is only when I'm prepared to take risks that I'm open to allow friendship to grow. And now for the weeds of harm. Apart from the risky laburnum, there are other harmful plants, weeds, which, as unwanted guests, suffocate the plants we want to grow by blocking off the light. They may look harmless, but if you're negligent, they spoil their environment. With friendships, it can just be the same. If you ask some adolescent who hang around in groups you may be tempted to call gangs, they will clearly tell you these are their very best friends. This group is where they